Blog Talk Radio.
A licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Thursday, April 11th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, yep, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you, too, can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com, or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. And you can find all the great Ware products here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com,
or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. I really appreciate you tuning in today, taking time out of your day from 12 to 2 or somewhere within that time frame and joining us every day. We do appreciate it, and our sponsors do as well. We are packing up here and getting everything ready to hit the road, on the road again. That's our kind of our theme song lately. But we've had about 3 days to kind of turn over the camper and the laundry and get supplies ready for the big event coming up this weekend, the big Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival. This will be our second year in attendance. The first year was awesome. We anticipate the second year being just as awesome, if not more awesome. And over the weekend, based on from Friday night to Sunday afternoon, over 25,000 people will walk through those gates there at the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival, and it is a wonderful and awesome event, and it is not very expensive at all. $5 gets you in. They may even have a full weekend package, I'm not sure, but I do know a ticket is $5, and it's truly an awesome event. 20 different bands on 3 different stages. So they have like the main stage where they have the big name bands, like Shenandoah is going to be there on Friday night if you're a country music fan, and some others. They have another bluegrass band where they have a lot of bluegrass bands and local bluegrass bands, and then they've got even another stage somewhere that's doing maybe classic rock or hard rock or what have you. So it's 20 bands, 3 different stages. American Poultry Association, American Bantam Association sanctioned poultry show. They'll have a sale tent there as well. They'll have tons and tons of vendors. They'll have the food vendors. They'll have games. They'll have contests. They'll have educational seminars throughout the weekend. I'm one of those. Last year we were under the Academy Sports tent, and that was sponsored, of course, by Academy Sports and Tractor Supply. And what I did was on all day Saturday and all day Sunday, 4 times. We had four 30-minute educational segments, so you can get the program when you enter and find out when I'm going to be on. Last year it was standing room only. In fact, the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival posted something about it yesterday, stating that last year the Chicken Whisperer was standing room only, but we've added more bleachers this year. They had 2 sets of bleachers there, and now I guess they're adding more. So definitely looking forward to it this year. We were hoping to leave today right after the show, but any of you in the southeastern United States know there is a front coming through. There is a risk of bad storms, including tornadoes, hail, high winds, severe thunderstorms, and I'm not risking it. So don't, you know, family comes first, plus hauling the big Chicken Whisperer mobile. So what we're going to do is sit here and bunker down and hold out for the storms to pass and then make an early start of it in the morning. And most of the severe weather should pass, so we're hoping to head out tomorrow, heading up to the Chicken and Egg Festival. We would have loved to head out today, spend the night somewhere around Birmingham, and then make the rest of the track up there on Friday. We're hoping to get up there Friday early to mid-afternoon, because we also want to partake in some of the awesome festivities Friday night with the bands and things like that. So it's going to be a great show. A great event, always is, 25,000 folks. Hope you can make it Friday night, all day Saturday, all day Sunday in Moulton, Alabama. the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival. You can go to their website, alabamachickenandeggfestival.com. Read all of the $5, and what a great deal. You can go in and get all those great fair goodies you like, the fried butter, the fried Oreos, the fried Snickers, the all that stuff that'll kill you in about 3 weeks, funnel cakes. I may partake in a funnel cake while I'm watching a band during my free time there. But none of the fried butter, the fried Oreos, or any of that. But maybe a big turkey leg and a funnel cake, possibly. So we'll see how it goes. But nonetheless, hey, you got to cheat every now and then. We know we have the fitness flock going on. We have a group of fans that are kind of watching our weight, watching our plate, and the fitness flock, we call it. So I got to have to stay loyal to that and them. So, but a little cheating every now and then is all right. Everything in moderation, as Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD, says, right? So nonetheless, we got that going on. Are you collecting the secret passwords? We're posting one every single day on our Facebook page. That is also posted on Twitter. Every single day for the month of April. That means there's 30 days in April. There will be 30 secret passwords. We'll post them on Facebook, which carries over to Twitter. Collect all those passwords, and you'll have a chance to win a beautiful new, brand spanking new chicken coop from mypetchicken.com. This is brand new. I can't let the cat out of the bag and give you all the secrets about this brand new designed, brand new production coop, but it is going to be awesome. And collect these secret passwords. We'll tell you what to do with them a little later. Also embedded in the secret passwords is a secret code. So we'll see if you can figure out the secret code that's embedded in the secret passwords as we give those out. So we got a great coop contest going on in April as well. So hopefully you're collecting those passwords for your chance to win. I know a lot of people are, and it's going to be fun, fun, fun. When we give that coop away on May 1st or May the 2nd. So very, very cool. Alrighty, folks. Well, we're going to go ahead and go to the switchboards today. And we've got Richard Freudenberger, publisher of Backcomb Magazine, which is coming on today. And he's going to talk all about and teach us all about organizing that home office. It couldn't be a better time. Of course, tis the season. So we're going to learn about organizing that home office and what that means if you're on your homestead. And we're going to bring him on right now as soon as I can click this button and have it work. So let's out there in Radio Land and in the live chicken chat room give Richard a big round of applause and a big welcome. Hey, Richard, thanks for coming on today. Appreciate you.
Yeah, sure, sure. That's fine.
Awesome, and we'll wrap up probably around one, a little after one, so we can continue getting ready for our big event this weekend and continuing that before the storms get here and get that thing, those things taken care of. But today, of course, continuing on with we've got kind of organizing our home office. A lot of people have home office, even though they may not work out of home. They may bring work home with them. They may have an office where, they're doing the coupon cutting, they're managing their homestead, they're doing their bills. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you work from home or you have a job at home, but it could be managing your home. So with your bills and your homestead and your expenses and things like that, everybody a lot of times has a home office, even if it's a laptop sitting on the edge of the couch next to an end table. That could be your home office, and we know how sometimes even that area can get very, very cluttered when you're spending time there between bills and flyers and magazines and your laptop and everything else that comes around. So we're anxious to hear and have our notepads ready to hear all about great tips on organizing our home office today.
Yeah, now it's a little out of the ordinary for this discussion, but everybody has some kind of filing need, taxes or financial stuff, or as we know, a lot of fair amount of people do work at home as really different capacities, and salespeople or just a whole lot of different people. So they actually do have a real office at home, and then everybody else should have a place where they pay their bills and take care of their day-to-day things. And if you run a farm operation or a growing operation or have any kind of livestock or whatever, there's going to be paperwork involved, and whether it's income producing or not, you still have to, they ought to keep records. Some businesses may not be actually tax deductible or suitable for taxes at first, but it is always a smart idea to save those receipts, because at some point you may be surprised people start making money, and even if you hadn't planned it that way. And if you will need receipts and records of your accounts coming in and your accounts payable to keep track of that business. So, you know, it's always a good idea to think ahead. And again, like you said, Andy, this is April 15th, quickly approaching here. And although probably most people have finished their taxes, it's a great time to talk about an accurate way to file and save your papers and all your information as far as inflow and outflow of money. So April's a good month to talk about that. And it doesn't really matter if it's paper records or electronic digital records. You still have to keep accurate records and keep track of them. So mainly this is really a discussion about about people who set aside a portion of their homes for doing some type of business or maybe not officially, but business or not business, but still keeping records. And you don't necessarily have to have a whole separate building or a separate office or a separate room to do this in. Although, as we'll learn a little bit later on in this show here, it's a good idea to try to do that. But as Andy said, maybe just a corner of the kitchen table or a little desk at the edge of a room or even just a drawer or something with a surface on it that can be cleared off and used is really adequate, but not ideal. There's a couple of layers of information here. It's not just about organization, but it's also about how you go about this, how you plan for your long-term growth if you're running a business, how you plan for just taking work home. That's also important. You have to be able to manage your time and your ability to lay your hands on things in such a way that if you take work home, you do not want to be leaving it at home when you meant to take it back to work the next day, and you discover that everything you've worked on the night before is left back at home, and you're trying to make a presentation at work the next day or explain something to somebody, and you don't have the paper. So the idea of just keeping track of things is sort of important. The other aspect of it is just the health aspects of is it comfortable in the office? Is the lighting and ventilation adequate? Is the computer screen set at the right brightness or a contrast? Is it a calming environment or is it a very distractive environment? All these things have to do with health.
When I was working and after I got off the truck, being a paramedic for many years, and started a business working with corporate and health and safety, I remember one of my largest clients, GE, out of Atlanta, GE Power, and their headquarters was in Atlanta for really the world. And they had an entire department, and their job basically was to make sure that whether it was a cubicle or an office or your workstation or what have you was the word is ergonomically correct, from the height of your chair, the type of your chair, that your keyboard, the lighting, the angle of the computer screen to you or your glasses, your wrist, your arms. I mean, it was amazing, the detail and the money that they spent to make sure that their employees were comfortable, but at the same time, like you're talking about health, not creating issues, being, the long hours that a lot of people today spend and sitting in that chair, in the cube, on the computer, on the phone. So it was amazing the different items I saw come in and out of that place and in cubicles and whatnot and things that were sitting there maybe in the clinic that were getting ready to go upstairs to the different places. It was amazing the time and effort and money they spent on that.
Oh yeah, and also, for a corporation especially, it's when you have thousands of employees, it's when you consider the amount of money that is spent on health mitigation of health problems. In other words, taking visits to the doctor, progressive checkup visits after that, things like just the cost of any surgery or the cost of any treatment. It is well worth their while when you multiply a problem times potential of, you know, several hundred or thousand employees. It is well worth their time to invest in healthy and healthful environments. And, you know, we look at things like tunnel carpal syndrome. I mean, you know, some years ago that was just a phrase. I mean, I know myself, and maybe it's because I, you know, in the community of people who, you know, who use keyboards a lot as writers, editors, and just people who tend to sit in front of the computer. But I know at least probably close to a dozen people that have some issue or other with their wrists and issues over directly related to the use of the mouse or the keyboard incorrectly. And eye problems, upper back problems, just from leaning forward too much, not having the chair at the right height, all that kind of thing. So that's a whole separate world there, but it's also part of the home office discussion. And lighting, that's another thing. Your eyes are very important to your health and to your economic well-being, obviously. And so it's not just the cost of the electricity and the cost of any fixtures or anything, but it's also, is the lighting adequate for your use within the office? And organization, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, just keeping things in places in such a manner that you can get your hands on them quickly without having to remember where did I put that or how did I file that under, what letter did I file it under or where was it or whatever. And there's a few other things, including some notes from our own editor, Lorna Lovelace, here back home, who has a sort of a bent towards neatness and really a week-to-week management of clutter so that we, not that we actually do anything about it, but it's nice to listen to how it should be done.
You know, it's a good point. It's so funny. The professional landscaper has the worst looking lawn. You know, the dentist might have the worst teeth. I mean, you know how it is. The writer can't spell. It's funny how that actually, you know, works out a lot of times. And we're talking, yeah, do as I say, not as I do type of a scenario over the years.
Yeah. No, I myself have a method that seems to work for me. I mean, I do have clutter on the desk, but I know exactly where everything is. The problem comes about with people like that is that when you're not there or when somebody has to fill in for you, that they don't know where everything is. So it's not a very transitional kind of work environment. Mm-hmm. But if somebody called me and if I was on a tour someplace or a trip or whatever, and somebody called me and said, I really absolutely have to get that, insurance policy that you were looking at 6 weeks ago. I need to have it right away so I can fax it over to so-and-so. I could tell them exactly where it is in what pile, how far down, you know, 30% down on the pile to your left. There it is. So at least I know where it is. But so let's just go through a few high points here. There's a lot of different ways to look at this, but I mean, certain things and elements are pretty standard throughout the whole thing. And you know, one thing I do find interesting is this isn't just a topic that is of interest but no concern to people. I have been to events, show events for the magazine, renewable energy or organic gardening or whatever it may be. And there, at this one event, there is always a woman there who actually runs a quite a successful business in hiring herself out as a professional organizational coach. And she will do everything from personally sitting with you and assisting you through the transition from being a messy person to a neatnik, if that's what it takes, all the way to something far simpler, just setting you up with a system, including furniture, filing necessities, organizational charts, a methodology, and maybe sitting down with you for a few hours to work you through that, and then letting you on your own. But she said I had noticed because her booth was close to mine, and this is occurring over several years. Every time I come back, she's always got clients over there, always got people interested in her, what she does, and apparently they're quite busy. So this is not something that that's just sort of every once in a while you need to do this. I mean, a lot of people need this kind of help, and you know, time is money, and it really does pay to at least try to make some effort at the organization. So let's start at the desk, maybe with the desk area. That's
mm-hmm.
that's important because, you know, especially in a small space, you may not need as large a desk surface as you think you might need. And part of the problem with a large desk surface is that you have a large storage surface as well. In other words, the desk becomes a storage surface, and that's not the idea. The idea is to store your papers if you use papers in the in file cabinets or in shelving designed to hold papers or in some other means of holding papers. If you have digital information, the idea is to store it in a virtual filing system in the computer on the hard drive and file it away as if you would, you know, thinking the same way you do it with paper. And so the desk becomes really, unless you have like a special situation where you're doing, maybe an art or graphic person may have some need for a bigger space to do some pattern cutting or some figuring out or you know, work with rulers or lines or light board or something like that. But the idea is to try to keep your desk to a usable space that's not too big. And that will help also in a room. You know, most of us don't have the luxury of being able to assign the biggest room in the house or have a separate building for your office. So we're all pretty much working in small spaces. And I've seen people with offices in closets and quite successfully too. But a small desk will fit in a small room a lot more easily than a large desk, so it makes it easier to fit things. And also, if you move a lot, which a lot of people do, I mean, they move their operation from place to place. You know, may have something to do with just location, or may have to do with rental costs, or just the need to be close to a certain environment. And when that job's over, you may have to pick up and move to another place. So it's really helpful if you can have a desk chair and filing systems and things like that are small, portable, and something that you can pick up without having to hire somebody to help you with it, or without having to lug it out with a huge hand truck, or rent a box van just to get your stuff out. I mean, that doesn't always make sense. Well, no, it sounds funny, but people do it all the time. It's you know, way too much records being kept that are not critical, and so that. That actually leads me to the second thought I was having was the how long do you need to keep records? And actually, most businesses, there are permanent records that most accountants will tell you that should never be thrown out, but they're not as many of those as you would think. Most businesses really are required to keep their records for about 7 years. And after that, you can dump everything. And if you have the luxury of having some help, you can always scan important documents and just file them digitally, and not keep the paper ones. So that also helps. I mean, you can if you insist on keeping certain paper records, you can sort of cull through everything and keep the ones that are just absolutely critical or you think are critical, and then you can scan. Some of the other information, and just file it in your computer, and you can get rid of all that paper, and it really does help. The other thing is, and I know we're guilty of it at work, filing and return envelopes, packaging materials, advertising flyers, things that may have come in the mail with your envelope, with your client's envelope or with your vendor's envelope. You'll have all that stuff in there, and when you file it, once you've paid your bill or once you've taken care of it, you need to file the receipt or the whatever it is that you need to save. You do not need to be saving the envelope that came in, the return envelope that came with it, the advertising flyer that talks about the promotion for the next 6 months, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That can go, all that stuff can go immediately into the recycling bin. Some businesses like to keep the envelope it came in just to have a record of the postmark. So if there's any question about when it was delivered, when you got it, and all that kind of thing. But most of that information is included on the letterhead anyway. So that's not really critical. Possibly in tax issues, it may be in tax returns and filings. But other than that, it's really not usually not that important. So the idea is to get a filing cabinet of some type that is not too huge, but adequate to you know fulfill your needs. I know back when paper records were you know were all there were, it was very the Cadillac of filing cabinets was the big tall 4-drawer legal file. The ones that were very hard to find used because everybody wanted them, and they were, you know, they were very expensive new, and you know, the full width, 4-stack high filing cabinets that were very heavy and very permanent and hold a lot of papers. But now it's almost better, and as I said, especially if you're moving your office, it's almost better to get all you really need is a 2-drawer file, something low, one drawer on top of the other, and if you need a legal size file with a full width, that's one thing, but most people don't, so the narrower file will be adequate for most people. And the other thing is if you get two of those, if you get two-drawer files, you'll have 4 total drawers, and you can always put a door. It's a real cheap desk, just a interior door, flat surface, flush type door that's you can still get them at the restore, Habitat Restores, or any secondhand stores with building materials. Will usually have a small selection of those kind of flush, you know, flat surface doors that are skinned in usually birch or some kind of nice hardwood, and they look good. They're smooth, strong. They have a good frame around the whole thing. You take the hinges off and just set them down flat, and they make excellent desks. The edges are already finished, and I've used those, you know, quite a bit in my work. So, I pick them up for $10 or $15, you know, and even if they're scratched or marred a little bit, it's not critical to, as a desk, it doesn't matter, as a desktop. So, they're going to be about seven, typical door heights, 80 inches, and anywhere from 28 inches wide to 36, and you don't really need the full depth ones. So we've got a couple of sliding drawer filing cabinets, most likely two drawers high. You may or may not want to have some organizational trays within the drawers themselves. When you pull the drawers open, some of the filers have maybe 6 or 10 individual trays in there. Some just have racks on the side where you can put in hanging envelopes, and then you can stick your file manila envelopes inside those and slide the information back and forth as you're looking for the alphabetical order as you put things, you know, in order there. That's one thing I really would suggest going to the office supply and getting a dividers that have the little tabs on them with the letters, you know, A through Z or whatever you need.
Yeah.
And it really helps. I mean, with a good working sliding system in there where you can shove, you know, if you're looking for something under F, you can shove back everything from G back with one hand and open it up with your fingers, you know, so you don't have to wrestle with stuff. An overstuffed drawer is really a pain to work with. So if you have a system that's kept neat and kept up with, it just makes it so much easier to reach in, to put things away and to retrieve them when you need them. And that's one thing I would highly recommend. Let me see what else. Just in that equipment, you know, that equipment arena, you know, you've got a desk, you've got the filing cabinets, and then maybe some shelving. That's really important too. Some a wall shelf unit with you know, for your, not just your books that you may need for reference, but also to hold just odd-shaped things that aren't, may not be adequate for the desk, or may not be suitable for the desk, and will not fit in the drawer, but still you need them. You know, you need them in the office. I mean, you know, if you use postal scales or I don't know, just things that are just, they're just odd shaped that you may need for your work, and everybody has a different need for, depending on what they do. But, you know, that's a good thing. That's a good candidate for the shelf. And it also keeps, you know, keeps floor space open, because your shelf, of course, is a vertical storage system, and it's up and down, and it's only a foot, sticks a foot out of the wall, a foot off from the wall, and takes up a lot less footprint or floor space than, you know, than a big desk or some other table or whatever. The other thing that might be better for some kind of people than others, the way, just the way they think and the way they work. I myself use either scraps of paper or pads to take notes on a daily basis, as far as like phone notes or just conversations you have with people, or you know, for interviews or whatever. Phone interviews, I'll use a recorder and a special pad I have just for the interviews. But you know, if you're just doing day-to-day business, you may have these scraps of paper. The point is not to just keep the scraps of paper lying around. What you need to do is, at the end of the day or at the end of the week, maybe no more than that, because you can forget what they are about. Enter the information. It may just be a name, a phone number, and a reference to what it was. But enter the information in a computer file so that you can throw the scraps away, and you know, into the recycling it goes. And the hard information is going to remain, or the digital information is going to remain in the computer, and you can file that under, you know, topic or under date. Some people like to work thinking in the terms of what they, you know, what time of the year or what time of the month they, you know, did certain things in. But you do absolutely need to have a system in the computer that replicates the system that you use in the hard paper, because that's one of the most serious errors that people do when they use a computer is to not understand how to file things. And that's any any computer, anybody who's gone to a computer repair person or who takes a bookkeeping course at the community college or whatever, I mean, takes a score, you know, the retired executives training programs that they have around different parts of the states, you know, just to help upstart newly started businesses. There's a group of retired executives that makes themselves available to help teach, you know, startup people how to run a business. One of the first things they'll say is you really need to learn how to use that computer as a filing system, because it's no different than doing it in the file cabinet. I mean, you've got to have it, you know, by name, corporation or purpose or whatever it is, however you do it normally, that's how you have to do it in the computer, and it just makes it organizationally sound instead of just guessing. Now, that I put it under, I'm thinking of a situation where a company might be, you know, ABC Manufacturing, but the salesman's name who you always work with is, you know, John Smith. Well, some people will file it under John Smith. Some people will file it under Smith, John. The correct way to file it is under ABC Manufacturing Company, because then anybody can come in if the person who normally works with that company is out for the day. Somebody from ABC Manufacturing may call and says, is William there? And no, he's on vacation for a week. Well, can you look up my record and see if I paid the invoice or whatever? And you go into the person's file cabinet, and there's everything is just a mess. And, you know, if it was just under the company name, you could find it in a second, and you wouldn't, you know, it is sort of embarrassing to get on the phone and can you wait? Oh, please hold, let me call you back. that doesn't really work very often. So so the idea is to at least make it appear as if you're organized. And so that computer organization is really, really important. And, you know, there's references. I mean, you can go online and just Google that kind of thing, filing or organizational stuff for the within the computer. And there's some really good examples. There's also any number of computer books or manuals will explain, you know, the basic way of keeping records like that. So that's one of the most important things to do is just to be able to keep records where you can locate them quickly. And in fact, and I'm sure this is a little factoid that most everybody's heard, but the one of the top three, I think it is what they say, the top three reasons for failure of a small business within the first year or two is failure to keep your records or to keep your records in a way that you can access them. Because if you don't keep records accurately, you can't judge what your cash flow is. You can't judge a lot of very critical things about marketing or money coming in or money going out or future planning. And it's one thing if you're it's a really long-term plan, but when you're starting a business, so much happens in such a short time. You have, you know, bills to be paid and things to be done, and all that's squished into a very brief window ahead of you, and you have to really make sure you take care of those things. So if you don't, you know, you're at risk of losing the business or falling behind or whatever. So that's organization is one of the top, or lack of organization is one of the top causes of failure. So, you know, that's a good thing to remember. So let me see. We've got we were talking about health before, and that's just really important. It's not just a long term issue, but it's a short term comfort issue, because if you're not comfortable, you get distracted by your uncomfort or discomfort, and you may start wriggling around the chair. You start focusing on, why isn't this thing rolling back? You know, when I want to reach for something, it's not rolling back. And then instead of worrying about what you're doing, you're worrying about, how do I make the rollers move on the bottom of the chair? Can I get a pad? Or let me go out in the garage and see if I can find a piece of plywood so this thing can roll. And, you know, before you know it, your day has been used on something totally different. So you may have to spend time on that, setting everything up. But once it's set up, you don't have to worry about it anymore. And that's, you know, that is essentially getting the computer in a position where you don't have to stretch forward to see it. You know, a lot of people have vision problems, and they they may be either holding their screen way far away so they can see it, or having to get real close to it so they can see it. But whatever it is, I mean, short of, obviously you have to have, if you need glasses, you need to get the correct lenses or contact lenses. But once that's settled, get that computer at a not just a distance from your eye that is workable, but also at the correct height. You don't really want to have to stand, to look down too much, because that's going to hurt your neck and your upper shoulders, and you don't want to have to look up too much, because that's same thing, it's sort of an unnatural position to look up too high. But that you get it right where you need it, and that also has to do with the height of the chair. So all that is set up, you know, as you said before, ergodynamically correctly, then you're going to be comfortable, and you can focus on your work instead of on your personal comfort. And it does make quite a difference. And that also has to do with things like ventilation in the room, temperature, dust, anything that just makes it uncomfortable to work. You really need to resolve, because that's going to just affect your ability to continue your work without being distracted. And there are people, as I said, like the clutter professional that I spoke of before, or people that just, within the office environment stores, office supply stores, and there are people who really can help you with some of that, setting some of that stuff up correctly if you want to go that far. The right kind of furniture, the right kind of chairs and things. And lighting, too, is really important. It's not just the lighting overhead or lighting on the desk, but it's also the computer contrast. If you have too high a contrast on the screen, not only are you wasting energy, but you're also straining your eyes. It takes extra power to make a bright and contrasted screen, computer screen. It doesn't sound like much on a single day, but on a daily basis, if you use that computer 5 days a week or 6 days
mm-hmm.
a week,
yeah.
When you add it up, especially a desktop where you have a tower and the big monitor, that will use quite a bit of power over a course of a month or a year. And so tune it down for the sake of your eyes and for the sake of your energy consumption. Laptops will have the same effect on your eyes, but they normally don't use as much power, but they will consume in their own relative to laptops, they will consume their battery power quickly when they're turned up too high, and you'll have to plug them in or keep it plugged in or plug it in more often. So that's the same thing at the end of the day. And the lighting is of the room is important. You don't want to have glare. You may want to invest in an anti-glare screen for the computer terminal. You may want to look at where your lighting is positioned. And in fact, you may want to invest. You probably should think about investing in, if this is what it takes, overhead lighting that is, more than adequate to serve your needs in the office. And that also will give you the opportunity to look at energy saving lighting. Some of the newer fluorescent, like a fixture, an overhead fixture, a fluorescent fixture. Some of the new T-series bulbs, the T5s, and some of the thinner, the skinnier fluorescent tubes are much more efficient with their fixtures than the older old-style tubes. And then even take the leap one step further and possibly look into, for task lighting or desk lighting, look into LEDs, which are becoming more and more appropriate for especially for task lighting in the office, because they're highly efficient, and they also give out quite a bit of light as long as it's in a concentrated area. They may not be the best choice for overhead lighting because their angle of direction isn't quite as good as some of the other lights, but they will save quite a bit of money over the terms of a year, even though they cost more to begin with. They last quite a long time, even longer than fluorescents, and they save a lot more energy, even more than fluorescents. So it's something to at least look into. It seems to me, I get a lot of press releases, a lot of information from energy efficient lighting corporations. It seems to me like every month there's a new, I wouldn't call it a breakthrough, but at least a new product or a new development in LED lighting for office, home, and workspace that I'm impressed with. I mean, they're really working that field diligently to bring us, proper lighting that uses less energy. We could talk all day about color and that kind of thing, but that's another thing. Just the temperature of the light. Light can be warm or cool. I don't mean temperature to the touch. I mean just the Kelvin temperature, meaning, a warm, cozy lighting is going to be more yellowish, and then as we get into the really bright daylight, it's going to be more of a blue, bluish color. And your needs in the office may vary within those ranges, and so you should be aware of. And at most lighting supply stores, or even at the box stores, they'll have a chart or at least an example of the usually selling three or four different types of color ranges bulbs. One for workshops, one for office, one for kitchen, one for reading, that kind of thing, and you can get an idea of what might be best for your needs in the way of Kelvin color temperatures. Let me see, we were talking about furniture, the size of the furniture and everything like that. I just also like to mention that if you can be sustainable in getting your furniture together, it might be, it might be a smart thing. I mean, if you want a smaller, or if you need a bigger desk, for example, just if you do happen to need a larger desk, I know at least in our community that the people are getting rid of those old, big old oak and maple, old office desks. They are mm-hmm. used to be almost like collector's items, and at some point, I think people just don't have the room or the inclination to store those things. I mean, it's one like a roll top desk or something like that, it's a different story. But I'm talking about just the old-fashioned office desks. They, at least around here, and they're still available in very good shape for $10. I mean, nobody wants to haul them off. Nobody wants to deal with them. So if you are in a place where you're going to stay and you can have some help getting it from where it is to where it's going to be, rather than go out and buying a composite, artificially surfaced desk that's gonna sway and sag after a couple of years, and maybe the drawers aren't going to work right, and you know it costs you several hundred dollars and all this kind of thing. You might want to look at just the secondhand stores and the and use garage sales and people's yard sales and such for things like that. And that doesn't have to go for the huge desks either. I mean, even other smaller pieces of furniture. Just the idea of just recycling or repurposing or getting something less expensive rather than go out and buying a new something.
Sure.
Is something to think about. You know, it really is, because the wood is going to last. Real wood is going to last. You know, for if you don't, if it's in a good environment, you don't abuse it, it's going to just pretty much last forever. And I don't think I have in my home anything. There is one desk that's not made of real wood. That's just the situation that was given to me, and you know, it's, I don't really use it that much. You know, everything else is easily available on the recycled or used market, and you can really save money in getting a good sustainable piece of real wood or real even metal desks. I mean, that's some of those older metal desks were quite sturdy, and they're worth hanging on to. The other thing was just organizing, and I sort of touched on it before, the way people organize things, and I sort of got off on the tangent about the computer organization, whatever, but some types of people like to have the scraps of paper, which we then are going to put in the computer on a weekly basis, the information that's on there, or they like to have, like, files on the desk or in a drawer or something where they can, you know, physically just get to it and look at it, but other types of people are more graphically oriented or more, I don't really know what, I'm sure there's a word for it, in the left and right brain sense, but other people work much better on a whiteboard that's pasted on the wall or hung on the wall, like a big chalkboard type thing with the whiteboard with the erasable marker.
Yeah.
And they're very reasonably priced at the office supply stores or even at yard sales, whatever. And those pens, you know, they're just like magic markers, but you can erase them. And you get all different colors. I mean, so if you can color code your needs, you know, red could be something to be taken care of this week, absolutely, and green can be 3 months from now, and black can be just the notes you take and whatever you want to do or not. But for people who feel more comfortable with that, you can just hang this thing on the wall where you can see it and just use that as your note keeper, and you can erase the information and start over again. You can if you have ideas, spur of the moment ideas, you can jump up and write them down on there. You can make lists. You can do calendars, concepts, deadline lists. I mean, it's just it's really really quite effective. And these things are sized usually about the small ones are maybe 2x4, the big ones are 3x5, something like that. And some of them are even, bigger than that. But you can find one that's not too big, and you can use that. So that's, sort of two different ways of keeping that kind of information. The notes and the to-dos kind of stuff, you can, do it graphically on the wall or just do it in the, in a smaller paper organizer, which then we would ideally put into a digital keystroke it into the computer and file it that way. Another thing that is important, and I've learned this myself personally, and I know as in my business, I do come in contact with a lot of people who are writers or who are working in publishing or advertising and marketing, whatever. You really need to keep your if you're running a business, I'd say for the most part, you're really depending on it for income. It's not so important if you're just keeping records of how much you spend on chicken feed and, what are you getting for your eggs and things like that. But if you're actually running a income-producing business that you either partially or completely rely on, it really, really is better, in my opinion at least, and to, in other in the opinion of many other people I've talked to, keep your home, your work office separate from your home activities. If at all possible, if there's a way you can set aside a room, you can close at the door of it and work without distraction from the outside, or even when you're not working, you can close the door of it, and that's a room that is not part of the daily activity, because that way you're not going to have the kids going in there messing with a computer or deleting things you don't want or scattering papers or using it as a place where they maybe shouldn't be in there. That's your workspace. Some people have the luxury of having a whole separate workspace outside in an outbuilding, or possibly up in the loft over the attic or in the attic or something like that, where it's really quite separate. Other people may just want to use a corner of, or you know, a small second bedroom or third bedroom or a back part of the pantry or something like that, or convert a corner of the garage space or whatever into a work area. But it, over time, I can pretty much attest to the fact that it's really more healthy for you, and more of a getting away from the 24/7 work mindset. If your work is right there where you live, you're always going to want to think about, gee, that one more thing, and it's so easy to get up from your family activity and say, I just want to make a little note about this, or I just need to call Joe about that, and that can really be distractive, not only to yourself and to your business, but to the whole family, and you really best to keep it out of sight, so that you know if you run your get up in the morning and run your business from 7 to 5 or from 9 to 5, whatever it is, shut the door at the end of the day, put everything away and leave, and your family and your either individual or your family time is your time, and it's not work time. So that's one of the most important things I can say. And you know, I've been in and out of different types of situations where, you know, I have home office and work office, and have done everything from, you know, total freelance to total employee managed kind of things, and everything in between, and it really does make a difference for everybody. The other thing I want to talk about was just our editor's personal notes on just clutter and collecting stuff, and she makes some good points, and you know, for most people it's a real good practice to follow, just keeping the clutter away from the desk and not piling it up. That sort of goes right back to what I just said about having that stuff in front of you and thinking you're trying to concentrate on a certain task and focus on it, and you glance up and there's a stack of things, and then you remember that, oh my gosh, that report was really supposed to be done by the end of the day today, and I started it, but I didn't even get near to finishing it. So you have to put everything away and, you know, change course and jump over there and do that. And it really is not very productive at all. So the idea is to really just keep a set of files in a way that you can label them on a weekly basis, like things that need to be taken care of in the short term. You just have a file saying, you know, to be done by Friday afternoon, or to be done by Monday, you know, the next week or whatever, but just have like a weekly set of files, and then you know, the longer term stuff you can just set aside, but you have to have an expiration date on that as well. You know, by the end of the quarter, for example, I need to take care of all the stuff that's in this box or in this file. Things like daily mail, that's something that should be handled immediately. So you immediately, you don't just look at the bill and say, oh, there's the power bill, and throw it down unopened. Open it up, take the bill out, and maybe paperclip the return envelope to the bill, throw the outside envelope away into the recycling, put that bill into the box that says, you know, to be taken care of before the end of the week, or if you have a separate place for invoices and bills, put it in there, and that has to be done every 30 days or 20 days, however your schedule is. And you know, that way you've got the stuff that needs to be recycled. You've got the stuff that needs to be taken care of, and it's only in one place. It's not laid down in possibly three places. You know, one, the correct place, and then on the desk, which is not the correct place, or maybe in another box, which eventually will be moved to the correct place, which itself is not the correct place. It has to be put in the right place to begin with, right, you know, right away. So that resolves all the problems with lost items, or where did I put that, or I just looked at this yesterday, now where is it, you know, that kind of thing. So there is, you know, there a lot to be said for just, even if it's just a cardboard box with the flaps cut off of it, so it's an open container, mm-hmm. labeled, you know, as it needs to be labeled, and so things go in that box, and then you just know there's really only two or three places where things are put, and you don't have a situation of looking all over the office or your home or whatever for, you know, where is that thing? You know, if you know you have put it in one of three boxes, it makes it very easy to find it. And, you know, any kind of buildup of clutter and trash and things that really don't need to be taken care of, like catalogs, if there's something in a mail order catalog that you really are interested in, the best thing to do is to tear the page out. I mean, you may go through the catalog and see one or two things. Tear the page out, put the order form, clip the order form to the page, and recycle the rest of the catalog. Because what will happen is those catalogs are thick, and they'll start to pile up, and you'll have a pile that's, you know, a foot high, unstable as well. It'll be, you know, you just jiggle the desk, and it'll knock over because they tend to be slippery. You don't need the rest of what's in that catalog. You just need what you're interested in. Go through that. Maybe at the end of 2 weeks or whatever time frame, it's no longer than 30 days, go through that list of interest, you know, of interest material you save, and if you're still interested, do something about it. Order the high-intensity lamp or the chicken waterer you wanted to order.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not interested in it, if after 2 weeks you say, you know, it was just an impulse, throw it away, get rid of it, recycle it. And that way, all that paper's gone. You've actually saved money because if you think in terms of impulse buying versus necessity, you know, sometimes it's very attractive to go with, to justify the impulse buy, and I'm going to do this right now, and I'm just going to do it. If you sit on it for a week or so and then look at it again, and if you just lost interest, then you saved yourself the cost of that item if you really don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Away it goes. You've cleaned up your office too. So, you know, that's you know, basically a good little rationale to follow, and you know, I found it works myself. I mean, we, you know, you will want to keep certain types of reference catalogs. You know, they're important, like office supply catalogs or whatever. But a lot of that stuff, again, is available online, so you may not really want or need to keep the paper catalog. A lot of companies are going towards, even though they do have paper catalogs available, it's only by request, and they don't mail it out just for the sake of mailing it. They will have their stuff online.
Right.
So that'll save a lot of space too. But yeah, I don't, that's really essentially the high points of everything. I mean,
mm-hmm.
there's, you know, some other points, but this is, you know, organization is just really, really a matter of discipline but it doesn't even take a whole lot. I mean, just really taking care of things when they occur, you know, filing things correctly and choosing a system or doing a little research to establish what kind of a system it will take, whether it's alphabetical, numerical, chronological, or whatever. Develop your system, use the system, and then continue to use the system and work on it that way. And you'll find it really saves a lot of time over the course of a day, and that builds up over the course of a month and a year and whatever. It also helps a lot during this tax time. And I still have not filed my taxes, but I can tell you that just this morning I was going through some stuff, and I had absolutely no trouble finding anything because I really just keep all that stuff in two boxes. One
mm-hmm.
is directly related to the taxes, like statements you get to say, this is your tax report for 2012. The other box is the day-to-day stuff, which I may have to access. There may be something that slipped through the cracks, or that I will need to go look up what the, you know, what the insurance bill was, or something like that. But it's only in one of those two boxes, and it's, you know, and it's in chronological order, so it's very easy to find. And you know, I pulled everything out within an hour and 15 minutes. I had everything I needed right there. So, you know, it's a lot different than what it used to be, where we'd have boxes and boxes of stuff and trying to locate through
I heard that. Yeah. Oh me. Yeah, I took when we moved down here, I took probably an SUV full of paper and information to this big shredder company and just said, here, have it all. It was just it was very liberating and just all this, just it was great. And so now we you can't always have a policy that said, hey, if I haven't, when you look at something, I have not used that in a year, it needs to go in the trash or garage sale or 2 years, because we all know there's some things that that doesn't apply to, but that's the first thing I do is, have I used this in a year or two, and then kind of analyze that when we're organizing and things like that. I had a beautiful home office in Atlanta, and it was perfect, but here a little bit smaller homestead and house, and so I haven't really set up my designated home office / had a whole broadcast area in the office up in Atlanta with the banner behind me, the whole nine yards, and I don't have that set up here yet. And again, we're getting by and it's working fine so far, but we've got the file cabinets and things like that. So a lot of great information regarding organizing your home office. And like we said at the beginning of the show, this could be your laptop and an end table next to the couch, or it could be an entire designated room, or maybe your personal bills, or maybe your home. You do have a home business or your homestead business, or selling eggs, or paperwork, or managing your feed and intake, outtake, costs, and things like that. It could be anything. So a lot of great tips, regardless of what type of home office you have out there in radio land. And so, again, if you like what you hear on the second and fourth Thursday of every month with Backyard, here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, when we have Richard on, then you need to subscribe to his magazine, Back Home Magazine. You can go to that website, backhomemagazine.com, and you can subscribe there. You can also give them a call. Someone will answer. You will be able to understand there's not a call center in India, and actually get that subscription taken care of. And so Richard joins us the second and fourth Thursday of every month with great homesteading information. We've got 3-4 more topics on the horizon here for the next 4 to 6 weeks, and so we're looking forward to that. And so, Richard, thank you so much again for joining us today, spending your time with us, and we look forward to seeing you here. Let me click here. It looks like on the on the 25th, but I normally take 3 full weeks off a year, the week between Christmas and New Year's, normally the week of Thanksgiving, and then I take a week during the springtime, spring break. And I didn't do that during our official spring break, so I may be taking the week of the 22nd off, which is that falls on your week. So I'll keep you posted off air regarding the week of the 25th if we have a show or not. I may take that week and spend time with the family designated somewhere, because we're pretty much due for that, especially after all the traveling we're doing this month and last month. It'll be nice to relax. But nonetheless, thank you very much for joining us, and I'll talk to you off air regarding the future schedule.
Okay, we'll talk to everyone in either a couple weeks or after that. So glad to be on, and we'll see you again.
Thanks. Thank you so much for coming on. We'll see you maybe, if not in a couple of weeks, and I guess 4 more weeks we'll have him on. And again, folks, he comes on, he talks about homesteading. We've had some absolutely amazing topics here on the second and third Thursday. Back Home Magazine Hour here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show. Tremendous information. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you took lots of notes. And let's see, no radio show tomorrow. We will be on the road, remember? We're heading up to the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival. We hope you can make it this weekend. Again, 20 bands, 3 different stages, APA, ABA Poultry Show. Oh, with a sale tent, all kinds of chicken-related vendors. We got prizes, we have contests, we've got food vendors, we've got a down on the farm area there at the location where they're going to teach ironworks and metalworks and woodworks and crafts and all kinds of great things, and many, many seminars educating you. Again, a lot of that has to do with homesteading. I will be there for the second year in a row. Hope you'll be there. So we'll get out of here as soon as the storms dissipate first thing in the morning. Maybe even before sunrise, and where we headed up to Moulton, Alabama. So then, hey, we come back on Sunday night later, Monday morning early. We'll have two or three days to turn everything over, the camper, the clothes, the equipment, everything like that. And we're heading out again probably next Thursday, heading down to a different part of Alabama, the opposite end, down to Mobile. The Mobile Alabama Master Gardeners and Book Clubs invited me down, and we got a big event there the following weekend. I'm also going to have a great picnic at a beautiful park with a local Mobile Poultry Club, which I'm really looking forward to that as well. So we'll be on the road again next weekend. And then we may take that following week off. It will be my birthday, too. So April the 22nd, Monday, I may take that week off to enjoy my family for spring break. Like I said, I was just thinking 3 weeks off. Sometimes we take 4 weeks off in the year. Again, between Christmas and New Year's, the week of Thanksgiving, spring break, because Jen being a teacher, we always have that week off. And then I think we take 1 week off during the summer before school starts back as a refresh before she has to get back to work and school. So I take that back instead of three. We normally take 4 vacation weeks off each year. Other than that, we continue to broadcast, and we've probably surpassed our 800th episode, 800 episodes in 5 years of broadcasting. So we thank you for tuning in. We hope you'll tune in on Monday. In fact, we got a great show coming up this coming Monday. I got an email from Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. He's going to be covering incubation on Monday, but it's going to be a special, unique show. He's apprised some questions. He's going to read the question. He's going to go in detail and answer those questions he's come up with. And this is also a lot of this information will be coming right out of his book on incubation that he's working on. And so this is going to be not your ordinary incubation show. A lot of technical information, a lot of great information about incubation. That's this coming Monday with Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. So I do hope all of y'all can tune in on Monday. So we appreciate you tuning in today. We hope you have a great day and a blessed weekend. And follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. And I'll be maybe posting some pictures from the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival. Hopefully I'll see you there. Come on up and say hello and give you a big bear hug. So y'all have a great day, a great weekend. God bless, and we'll see you back here Monday with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. Have a great day, everybody. ¶¶